Hello and welcome back to the 2%. Today I'm thrilled to share a conversation with Fiji Simo, CEO of Instacart. Born and raised in France to a family of fishermen, Fiji was previously the most senior female product executive at Facebook before joining Instacart as CEO in 2021 and leading the company to make its public market debut 2 years later in September of 2023. This conversation is jam-packed with leadership lessons every female founder can learn from. So let's begin. So Fiji, thank you so much for joining us. Thrilled to have you on here today. How are you doing and where in the world are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm based in beautiful Carmel, California.
Fantastic. So starting with your background, I know you grew up in France in a family of fishermen and were the first in your family to attend high school. Fun side note, je parle un petit peu de français. I actually went to cooking school in France. So always love, you know, the opportunity to kind of practice my French. But going back to kind of that experience, would love to maybe hear a little bit about your upbringing and really what led you, you know, from that childhood experience into the world of tech.
Yeah, as you can imagine, it's not a fully linear journey from a fishing village to Silicon Valley. But yes, I grew up in a family of fishermen who were very focused on work ethic. And I can tell you, you know, we didn't have much means, but I think the biggest richness that my parents instilled in me is this idea that anything is possible if you work hard enough for it, you know. And so I worked really hard. I ended up, you know, in business school in France at HEC Paris. And interestingly, I was really interested in this idea of like exploring the world and seeing a lot of things that I didn't get to see during my childhood because my dad was, you know, working absolutely all the time. The fishing industry is a profession where you don't take vacation or anything. So I hadn't really traveled and I wanted to explore industries that were moving at a, you know, much faster pace. And so a lot of those dreams were mostly informed by the media, to be honest. I always joke that I came to California because I watched too many episodes of The OC. and even like, you know, discovering the business school in France that I ended up attending, that came through a documentary that I watched when I was, I think, 10. And I didn't really even know the world of business or what that meant. But I saw these like, you know, really independent people traveling the world and, you know, I'm making all of these important decisions. And so that kind of guided my journey, even though I didn't really know kind of what I wanted to become. But I was very curious. I just wanted to expand my horizons and, you know, studying business and coming to the US to live my American dream was a big part of that.
I love that. So inspiring, you know, to kind of see that arc, you know, in your professional life. So I know, you know, prior to joining Instacart, you had a long storied career at eBay, as well as Facebook, where I think you joined as a product marketer in 2011, climbing the ranks to lead the Facebook app as the company's most senior female product executive. So impressive. What would you say are the most important lessons or skills that you brought from your past career experiences to what you're doing today at Instacart?
So many. You know, I always say that, I kind of went to the school of Mark Zuckerberg for 10 years. And one of the most valuable things you learn at that school is this idea of always having a very long-term vision, but combining that with short-term excellent execution, because you never get to your long-term vision if you don't have, you know, excellent execution short-term. And so I really built those chops at Facebook of really trying to figure out what we wanted to change in the world over a 10-year time frame, but also how we would put together the right teams, the right products, the right structures, to actually achieve this vision. And I certainly brought that to Instacart, as well as, you know, all of the focus that we had on building great consumer products, building great advertising products, which are things that are certainly very helpful in my current job.
And for those who aren't familiar, and I'm sure everyone is, how would you best describe Instacart and the services that you offer, especially kind of how you differentiate yourself from competition?
Yeah, so Instacart delivers grocery and other items, a lot of daily essentials, from more than 80,000 stores, 1,400 retail banners, and builds the technology that power grocery transactions. So we are well known, obviously, for the Instacart app, where you can order all of that and get it delivered to your front door in less than an hour, very often. But we also take the same technologies and offer that on our retailers' websites. Like, you know, if you think Publix.com, Kroger.com, Sprouts.com, like they reuse a lot of our technology and logistic platforms for their own businesses. And so when I joined the company in 2021, I really saw the possibility of Instacart to be much more than just a grocery delivery app, but really to build the technology that power every grocery transaction, and we're well on our way towards that.
Fantastic. And I know, you know, the other interesting thing about your career at Instacart is that I believe you're the first outsider to lead the company. And I'm curious, you know, as you transitioned into this role, what was that experience like? I'm sure parts of it were an asset and parts of it, you know, just required kind of learning to kind of keep up with the rest of the organization.
Yeah, I think when you take a CEO job, from especially taking over from a founder, you need to arrive with a lot of humility of really learning the place, learning what made it successful to date, learning what the culture is like. And then once you have deeply understood that, you also need to make your mark and set your vision for the place, because obviously you wouldn't be brought in if it was just to continue what was happening in the past. And so finding that balance is really key. And, you know, when I took over, there were a lot of things that at Instacart that were working exceptionally well. Like, this was a company that had massively, like, you know, stepped up during the pandemic and became an essential service for many. And you know, there was a culture inside the company that had made that possible that I really wanted to continue harnessing. At the same time, when I joined, it was also a critical time for the company because it was post-pandemic. Our gross transaction volume was declining double digits. We were not a profitable company. The market was completely readjusting towards, you know, valuing profitable companies as it should. And so I had to take the company through a lot of these challenges and come at the other end. And now we have, you know, a growing company, a profitable company, and we're really proud of the turnaround that we have done. But it required, you know, having a very different playbook and respecting what had been done before while also, you know, building upon it.
How would you describe your leadership style? And is, you know, when you look back, have you seen that evolve over time?
Oh, of course, it evolves all the time. Like, I used to tell my teams at Facebook that even if you have the same title, every year you need to think of your job as completely different. Because when you're in high growth environments, what the company, any company, needs from you changes all the time. And if you don't realize that, you know, every 6 months, every year, the company needs a different, better version of you, you end up not giving the company what it needs and being left behind. And so for me, that's the joy of being in business, is that I get to constantly improve, I get to constantly learn and refine my leadership style.
Do you have examples of that at Instacart?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I really like to do is find magic in people and shine a light on that. And I believe management is fundamentally a process by which you can do that. And so At Instacart, I organize these dinners with my leadership team where I share what I find to be their superpower and ask them to explain to the rest of the management team how they develop that superpower so that everybody can continue learning from each other. And so that's something that always helps amplify, you know, the magic in people. And then the second example is that when I arrived at Instacart, we reset our company values. And one of the values I cared a lot about was this value called grow the pie. And what I mean by that is that we as Instacart only win when our partners win. We only win when we lift the ecosystem up. And I think that's really important in times like these where sometimes, you know, people and companies go to scarcity. And I think it's really important to continue to be anchored in abundance and really see technology as a way to lift all boats and win when others win. And the fact that you don't have to have someone lose for you to succeed. Now, how would I define it today? I think a lot of what I pride myself into is having a leadership style that is all about, you know, one of the values at Instacart is called put it all on the table and not burying your head in the sand. It's like we face challenges head on. We look at them, we tackle them. And I think that's really important. Another part of my leadership style is that I want to give people an environment by which they can really shine and stretch themselves and really take risks, but also know that, you know, I'm going to be there to support them. So I'm highly demanding, but I'm also highly supportive. And I think the combination of the two can lead to great performance in teams. And that's something that gives me a lot of joy when I see people that are really, having the best career possible in the company because they are stretching themselves, they are learning new things.
You took your role as CEO, I know, during a time of both great macro as well as, you know, I'm sure company volatility. I'm curious, you know, for you over the past few years, what would you say has been the most difficult challenge you've encountered as CEO and maybe any learnings from that?
Yes, so many. I think it's been a time of enormous change. And so knowing how to lead teams through that much macro change and keeping them focused on the long-term vision, which is such an exciting vision, is really the key. Like you have to really set a 10-year view. And, you know, I did that very early on when I came. We did a large vision summit where I explained to the team that we were not going to be thinking about things quarter by quarter. We really were going to set this big arc of building all of the technologies that power every grocery transaction, which goes much beyond the definition of Instacart as just a grocery delivery app. So, you know, that's a 10-year view. And keeping them anchored in that while navigating a lot of the, you know, short-term disruptions and training the company to be resilient to change. And I think there's a couple of things that, you know, have helped us during that time of change, which is what I was talking about earlier on in terms of like tackling problems head on, not burying our head in the sand, and really making sure that we have a culture that allows us to discuss all of these issues in the open and come up with the best solutions. And so I think we've done, you know, pretty well given all of the different changes that have been thrown at us. I think I'm particularly proud of the fact that we had committed to giving employees a path to liquidity through an IPO, and that was a very tall order in an IPO market that was entirely closed for more than 18 months. But we managed to, you know, give that to the teams, and so that's something that was definitely a tough thing to navigate. But we're excited that we were able to go out.
Incredibly impressive. So you know. Part of the strategy, I know, you know, you touched on this earlier, was proving that Instacart is more than, you know, a marketplace. There's opportunity for multiple revenue channels. How did you think through that, over the course of your tenure now as CEO? Was it an immediate strategy, or was it based on learnings and insights over the course of your time?
It's a bit of both, but I had the luxury of being on the Instacart board 6 months before I started as CEO. So that really allowed me to gain a lot of insights into the company. And when I joined, I already had a pretty good sense of what I wanted to do with the company. And to give you an example, I made the acquisition of Capercarts really at the very beginning of my CEO tenure. And Capercarts, for those who don't know, are smart carts that you can use in store and you can put products inside the cart. The products automatically get detected, and as a customer, you can check out directly from within the cart. You can get recommendations of recipes based on the products that are in your cart. So it's a really amazing piece of technology. And for me, it was really obvious that the future of retail was going to be an omnichannel future. And Instacart had already developed a great online experience, but really needed to bring the digital transformation to the stores as well. And that's what we're doing with Capercart. So that's one example. Another example is advertising, where, you know, a lot of the growth that we've seen in our profitability has come from our advertising business. And for having run ads at Facebook for many years, it was obvious to me that Instacart was very well poised to develop a really good advertising business that would help customers discover great products as they were building their carts, but would also help brands get discovered, including small emerging brands. And, you know, that has been a very big part of our success as well. And then there are other opportunities that, you know, have come up obviously over time as I've learned the business, as I've like gone to all of our retail partners and heard like their needs and what they want us to build, because that's ultimately the best way to build products, is to really get the input directly from your partners.
Yeah. And your customers. I think that's what is so interesting, is you have, you know, these two sets of customers, three actually, with advertisers.
Actually, four, because we also consider our shoppers, personal shoppers, to be the core side of our marketplace. So we listen to, you know, the end consumer, our retail partners, our brand partners, and our shoppers, and they're all incredibly important to making this four-sided marketplace work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, as you mentioned, incredible accomplishment in September of this year to really, I think, you know, break open this IPO market that's been frozen for 18 months. I'm curious, you know, what was the process like leading up to this milestone, and any lessons learned from that?
So many. I think the big thing, you know, is that we had been a company that was on the starting blocks for going public for a long time. And the thing that we decided would be our guiding principle was that we were going to really orchestrate an IPO that was going to be all about helping our employees with liquidity. We did not need to raise money. We have $2.2 billion of cash in the bank. So this wasn't an IPO to raise money. This was really an IPO to make sure that the people who have been with us for, you know, 12 years now can get liquidity. And so our choices started even well before the IPO. And just to give you an example, you know, when the market started to turn, a lot of private companies were still granting stock to employees at these very inflated valuations. And back to the point I was making on our leadership philosophy of really like not burying our head in the sand, tackling problems head on, we were one of the first company, if not the first one, to actually say, no, we are going to grant, you know, stock at a reduced valuation that's much more reflective of what we think we would be worth if we were a public company. And employees were really appreciative of that. And, you know, the big learning is that very often the right thing to do is different from the thing that looks right. And I had plenty of people telling me, oh my God, are you insane? You're going to tell the world that you're valued less than your last round. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but like, you know, that's like, that's the obvious thing to do if that's the right thing to do for our employees. And so we started with that approach, and that has guided us pretty much in every step all the way towards an IPO. And even, you know, we ended up bringing NASDAQ to the office and celebrating the IPO at the office so that more employees could experience the joy of that moment instead of doing it in New York. And so all of these decisions contributed to really having a very employee-first view of this event.
I love that. In terms of the actual process itself, as you were thinking through, you know, the different options that you had, you know, what was it that led you to believe that September was, you know, ideal timing, and just, you know, internally and externally, any surprises that came along with this process?
So we never really thought of it as ideal timing. I mean, we all know that even to this day, you know, IPOs are tough in this market. So we never thought of it as like, we're going to wait for the perfect moment. Instead, what we thought about was, are we ready internally? Do we have all of the right processes in place? Do we have visibility on our numbers? Do we feel like what we are going to present to the street is something that we're proud of? And, you know, our strong profitability was a big part of that story. And then based on that, are we starting to hear some investor appetite in investing in new businesses? And so once all of those conditions were kind of gathered, we decided to go, but we weren't trying to time the market for a perfect window. We really wanted to give liquidity to employees and do that at a time where we knew there would be some support for the stock, obviously, but do it in a way that, manage all of these objectives.
In terms of your role since going public, are there any aspects that have changed significantly?
Not really, because we have been forcing ourselves to operate like a public company well before the IPO. And I recommend that to any, you know, private CEO, because it's really important to have all of these aspects down. Like even, you know, earnings, we have done many quarters of earnings with our private investors where we ran them exactly like public earnings so that we would be well prepared. So I would say not much change. And a lot of what I've focused on, as I was saying, is really anchoring the company on a 10-year vision. And that's incredibly important because, you know, in a market where, you know, you can be like moved in many different directions if you're short-term driven, you really have to have this long-term vision anchoring you and motivating an entire company to go to great heights. And that's serving us very well in this environment where we're staying focused on the big opportunity we have on the future and the fact that we have incredible, tailwinds of grocery being a very underpenetrated market online and our conviction that it will end up matching other categories of commerce in terms of online penetration over time.
I love your comment around the 10-year vision. I'd love to maybe hear, you know, as you think about what constitutes the most important parts of that vision, you know, what are you excited about? What are you working towards?
Yeah, absolutely. So I touched on it a little bit. First off, we think that online grocery is still vastly underpenetrated, and this is a service that everyone should use. Like every family would benefit greatly from, you know, saving time and getting groceries delivered. And therefore, we want to make sure that we give access to as many families as possible to the service. The second thing is that we also believe that sometimes families are going to want that delivered to their home, and sometimes they're going to want to go to the store because, you know, you have different use cases. And we believe that our technologies can power this omnichannel future and help retailers with their digital transformation in stores. And our Caper Carts are an example of how we do that. So that's, you know, a very big opportunity for us that we're excited about over a 10-year view. Then the next thing is that we have done a really incredible job at building technologies to help retailers power their own businesses. But these technologies can apply to many more parts of the supply chain. And so you can think of the fact that the entire food system right now is not technology enabled. And if it was technology enabled, it would have a lot of advantages. We could use AI to predict inventory. We could reduce food waste. We could do a lot of things that would, that, you know, are very common in industries that are technology enabled, but our food supply chain, which is so critical to our health, to our climate, is still missing a lot of that technology enablement. And we want to, you know, be a part of that. And so that's something we're really excited about as well. And then the last thing I'll say is that one thing that is very clear to me is that as a company that is at the intersection of the relationship that people have with the food they eat, we also play a role in their health because food is fundamentally the best kind of medicine. And so a big initiative for us is really building the technologies to scale food as medicine programs and partner with healthcare companies, whether it's payers, providers, nonprofits, to really scale food programs and make it possible for anyone to have access to healthy, nutritious food and for providers to prescribe food as easily as they prescribe medication.
I love that. That's amazing. And that leads me to the next question, which is the startup that you are co-founder of on the side, with all the time that you have, the Metrodora Institute, which I believe is focused on researching and treating complex neuroimmune disorders. You know, we were early kind of pre-launch investors in Maven, amongst other women's healthcare investments. And so would love to just hear a little bit more about this and your inspiration in starting it.
Absolutely. Well, about 5 years ago now, I was diagnosed with one of these conditions that impacts the nervous system and the immune system. And in fact, primarily impact women. And what I realized is that both the care and the research on these conditions was incredibly lacking. On the care side, when you have one of these conditions, they impact you from head to toe, but our medical system is really not set up to look at the whole body. You're bouncing around from specialist to specialist. They're treating you like a set of body organs and not as a whole human body. And so with Metrodora, we are putting all of the best specialists on these conditions under one roof so that they can collaborate and give patients a complete plan of care that looks at their whole health. And then on the research side, what I found is that research was really disconnected from clinical care. I was very naive in, you know, thinking that given the horrible burden that these conditions carry, you would have many people working on research, partnering collaboratively with doctors and patients. And, you know, I was clearly too influenced by tech, where all of the problems that we face, we bring multiple people at the table to solve it together. And that definitely was not the case in healthcare and scientific research. And so the innovation that Metrodora is also bringing to the table is really embedding a full research institute inside the clinical care model so that all of the patients that come can be immediately, if they want to, obviously be enrolled in research, in clinical trials, and in advancing our understanding of these diseases at the biological level.
That's so amazing. You know, there was just an announcement yesterday about the White House creating a council for women's health. So, you know, I just think that we're so long overdue in you know, tackling so many of these issues around women's health. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
So the 2% is, you know, really focused on highlighting stories of people who are working to improve the stats around, you know, this issue of creating more equity in venture capital and in tech. You're obviously a role model for so many. I'm curious, from your point of view, what do you think it will take to get more parity, you know, within this world?
Well, I wish I had the perfect answer for you, but I think it takes, you know, people first understanding the business case for diversity. You know, I always go back to that, where fundamentally, when you look at the stats, investing in diversity creates better business results. And so in the same way, investing in diverse founders becomes a competitive edge for the funds that decide to back them up. And so I hope that, you know, the business case will end up, you know, speaking for itself and accelerating that. The second thing is that what I found in my career is that the more you have women and and diverse talent around lifting others up, the better. And yeah. and I think, you know, we definitely see that at Instacart. You know, I heard the absolutely atrocious stats that, you know, only there's only been like 25 IPOs led by women in the last 10 years, and it's like less than 1% of them, which, you know, is a really terrible stat. But I look at my management team, and more than 50% of them are women, and they're incredibly badass. And a big part of that is because, you know, I focused a lot on that, but also because our product is really geared towards women. And of course, like, our management team needs to reflect our customer base. And so I think once we have, you know, more women in this position of influence, we're going to be able to change the number in a more meaningful way. But when it comes to, you know, funding, I think there's still a big taboo on women and wealth. And I think if, you know, we start to see more women gathering wealth, and that becomes less of a taboo, that will create a virtuous cycle where these women will invest in more of their networks, which will naturally be more diverse than others. And so I can't wait for this virtuous cycle to happen. And I very much thank you for being at the center of it.
Oh, thank you. So we're going to move into a quick lightning round of a couple questions, and feel free to answer with whatever comes to mind first. We'll start with, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Play the long game.
When did you recognize your entrepreneurial spirit?
Ooh, very early. As a child, I was always trying to sell everything. I would like make necklaces, and I would sell them at my mom's store. Very early.
Anything that you'd like to plug or announce here?
I'm really excited about what Instacart is doing with AI. I think, you know, I know talking about AI is so cliche these days, but I always say that I'm a pragmatic technologist. I like technology that helps people's lives, like, you know, right now. And with AI at Instacart, what we're trying to do is help people solve the problem of what's for dinner, what do you put on the table? A new feature where, by just taking a picture of a recipe or a picture of a handwritten list of items, we can turn that into a cart that you can buy on Instacart. And in my mind, it's all about, you know, using these really magical technologies to help people in their daily lives with chores that, you know, can free up some of their time.
Where can our listeners find you online?
Well, you know, I did spend 10 years at Facebook, so I'm definitely, when you've led the Facebook app, you're definitely still, you know, in love with the Facebook app, so you can find me there. But I also have a LinkedIn newsletter called Food for Thought, so you can find me there as well.
Well, thank you so much, Viji, for joining us. Such a pleasure to hear more about your experience over the last couple years, and really, really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining the 2% for today's episode featuring Viji Simo, CEO of Instacart. Viji is an incredible product, people, and strategy leader, and I hope you are as inspired by her story as I am. Stay in touch with us on Instagram at Female Founders Fund and on Twitter at FCubeVC. And for those of you building the next billion-dollar businesses, we'd love to hear from you. Send all pitch decks to pitches@femalefoundersfund.com and we'll be in touch. And finally, if you're interested in working at one of our 45-plus female-founded startups, explore our job opportunities at jobs.femalefoundersfund.com.